our analysis off of coverage increases by about 500,000 by 2016, with 313,000 of those currently uninsured. So 313,000 people now newly getting insurance. The federal share of that by 2016 at full would be $3.8 billion, rising to $5.5 billion in 2022. State share very low in the early years with 100% match. That's a little bit of the administrative cost, and then up to $645 million by 2022 when you get down to the 90%. So it's real dollars, real money, money that could be spent in other ways in Pennsylvania. We have shortages on education. We have, in my area, Philadelphia School District with a $300 million annual structural deficit in its budget. So when you start thinking about what those requests are, you get that. We looked at three things: reductions in state spending. There are some programs that would now be covered under Medicaid that the state has been paying for. Increases in household discretionary income. These are for people who are getting insurance from other parts who now qualify under the Medicaid expansion. How they will now be able to shift spending. And then increases in spending on health care for all the new people who are getting in. Looked at the economic and revenue impact, used IMPLAN as our model to do that. The other three studies all used, I think, Families USA, I think, did use IMPLAN. RAND used REMI, and the Independent Fiscal Office and ours used RIMS, so four different models, all those four kind of things. And then we did look at the fiscal impact. Summary of the key findings, and I'm going to go very quickly. First was Pennsylvania budget savings. We looked in both 2016 and 2022 at the beginning and the end of the program. Basically, these are all either shifts or removals of state dollars now being able to be covered under the Medicaid. Some of it's just very small percentages. Most of the mental health and the drug and alcohol, it's like 5% of the total cost that the state pays. These are now people who would be covered under Medicaid who would not get it. Big ones would be under our general assistance health care program and some of the state uncompensated care payments that would go away as we do that. But $412 million in 2016. 595 by 2022. Big numbers again. So when you think about that cost, 645 offset by the 595, it's still a negative if you look at that just on those savings. Now, this doesn't count, say, something like our friends from Oregon were talking about, efficiencies or new ways of doing it. This is just shifts and movements within the process. The federal funds would generate new spending, the state fiscal savings. New household spending, new healthcare spending, about $3.3 billion in 2016, $4.7 in 2022. That's net. So there are things that if you don't do expansion that you will get money for. We netted that out in terms of that. So in terms of new federal spend, new dollars as a result of federal changes, the expansion leads to new jobs, economic activity. GDP, wages, and earnings, about 35,000 jobs in 2016, 43,000 jobs. Pennsylvania is a very rich healthcare state. And so when we start talking about spending dollars on healthcare in Pennsylvania, there are a lot of multiplier impacts. There are a lot of different changes that happen. That economic activity, really, when you look at the net of GDP, $3 billion and about $4.4 billion, that's about 1% of our state economy. Employee wages about $1.8 billion and $2.6 billion in 2016 and 2022. That all then translates into increased state tax revenue. So when you do that, and these are fairly conservative. Big ones, new income tax revenues. The one that's controversial is the new insurance gross receipts tax. So these are folks with new plans. So in Pennsylvania, you have a gross receipts tax on medical plans. This is an area where our state is worried a little bit about whether that would be allowed over the long term, and the bigger concern may be, though, that they get that money already for Medicaid plans and whether they would continue to get it if that changes. But they also remember California gets it and a couple of other states get that type of revenue. Corporate income tax revenue and sales tax revenue as a result of the economic activity. So three of those are as a result of economic activity. One is a result of purchasing health care insurance. The combination, when you look at it in terms of net fiscal impact, and I think this is the other part of the politics of this. There's the politics of do you oppose ACA? There's also the politics of almost every state is facing major fiscal challenges. So if you can't make this look like it, you know, if this doesn't work on a fiscal basis, it's a real challenge. When you use the healthcare savings, the revenue impact, and less the total state spending, net fiscal impact of about 675 in 2016, declining to 368. So if we took out that gross receipts revenue that was on the previous slide of 187, you're down to 181. It's getting awfully close on that, and that becomes a little bit worrisome. You know, at the end of the day, I mentioned four studies. They all come to basically the same conclusion. And three of them did fiscal impact. Three of them came to that same conclusion. It is a big decision for our Commonwealth. It's hundreds of thousands getting coverage, billions of dollars being spent. It is about the incremental change. What happens if you expand? It's big dollars and big expenses and big pain in the neck on all the ACA expansion for the state. And I think that's one of the real challenges for the administration is it's easy to conflate all the changes you're having to make in your Medicaid program as a result of the changes in ACA with what's going to happen in expansion. And it's very difficult to decouple those in your head and even in your budgetary projections. As the match declines, you do have to get worried. And where the uncertainty is it's the uncertainty that comes back. The belief or the concern that the feds will not even make that 90% match. And that's where a lot of the opposition comes from. But I will say, as someone who was doing a study and knew that there were other studies, the nice part about it was three of them came to basically the same conclusion. These are inputs into the decision. In Pennsylvania, you're going to see hearings. We also have the other context is everything else that's going on in the Pennsylvania budget battle. We have, met a lot of you are from Pennsylvania or have been in Pennsylvania. We have a state store system that our governor is trying to privatize. So take those state-owned liquor stores and turning them into privatizing our lottery, which affects all of our senior citizens. All the dollars go to that. Reforming our pension plans, state pension plans with $40 billion in unfunded liability over time. All of those at one time. So the other question is this part of that budget negotiation, and is it one of the trade-offs that goes along with that? Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Greg Moody. I'm the director of the very excitingly named Office of Health Transformation in Ohio. In Ohio, I'm the policy guy. And given the policy heft in the room, I think today I'll lean a little more to the political storyline than focus on some of our policy. For us, the protagonist in our storyline is Governor John Kasich. He's an interesting personality. He was the chairman of the House Budget Committee in the 90s. And I was actually on that committee as a staff person with him. And, back then, 20 years ago, it was totally different. There was the potential of a fiscal cliff and a government shutdown. And entitlement spending was out of control. There was a moment where he went around the room and said, okay, it's Medicare. I get it, it's Medicare. But we have to talk about Medicaid. Who's the new guy? And I was the new guy. So my assignment 20 years ago was Medicaid, and here we are. We went different directions, and then a couple years ago, he decided to run for governor. He decided to run for governor 2 years before 2011, when he came in as governor. And, I really credit him for this. 2 years in advance, he knew Medicaid was a third of the state budget, and that it would have to be a part of the conversation of what a governor would do to run the state. So he called a few people and said, I'm getting the band back together. And many of those folks who very early had worked together, had a real high level of confidence working together, reassembled. At the time, I was doing a lot of, it couldn't have been more perfect. I was with Health Management Associates. I was writing for the Commonwealth Fund on best practices in states. So had this kind of rich access to many of you. I interviewed many of the people in this room. A former professor of mine is in this room. It was the perfect training. So when we came into office, we had some preparation of what we wanted to do. And it was, in part, in reaction to this reality. This is my version of starting with a scary slide. In Ohio, 2 years ago, we had a $7 billion budget hole we had 89 cents in our rainy day fund.
And you counted it.
I put in a dollar and doubled it. In the 3 years prior to Governor Kasich coming into office, Medicaid grew 33%. And Medicaid had really not changed for a while. It was a little bit stuck. And we had 1.5 million uninsured folks. So when you look at this, you don't think incremental. You think we have to do something pretty big. So this is what we did. On the third day in office, the governor created the Office of Health Transformation, which took all of our health and human services agencies and organized them under a single point of control for strategic planning and budgeting. That's the Office of Health Transformation. On the fourth day, on that day, wrote our entire federal application to be a dual eligible demonstration state and submitted it. And then on the fifth day, we got approval and endorsed this plan in its entirety. So even though some of this doesn't activate until 2013, from the beginning, we had a sense of what we were trying to work for. The first priority was modernizing Medicaid, because with a budget hole, we had to act first there so Medicaid can contribute to stabilizing our budget. And then move on this year to some infrastructure investment, and then eventually get to this issue of putting Medicaid on the table as just another purchaser in partnership with the private sector to think about how we change how we pay. Now, nothing on this list is original, right? Because every state is working on its version of this. I think what's a little different in Ohio is the organization allowed us to take on more things all at once, and there is a real interactivity here. Health Homes for Behavioral Health are helping us bring about our dual eligible project in Medicare and Medicaid. Our new eligibility system is supporting all of our programmatic activities. There is a real leveraging that occurs when you can bring several things online and when you're able to copy folks who have done the hard work of getting it to work. So being a little behind the ball actually helped us, I think, organize what for us has been a fairly effective strategy. Now, over here in this column, modernize Medicaid, extend Medicaid coverage to more low-income Ohioans, was on that list from the outset. Because remember, in January 2011, every state was under a mandate to expand its Medicaid program. And our very conservative governor made the calculation that if we did nothing and that hit, it would swamp the system. So the urgency to do this was in part driven by this mandate to expand the program. But then, as we got closer and it became optional, the work was already underway to put the state in a position to be able to expand the program and not swamp the system. So that was kind of the storyline for how our governor planned to do this. And then when it became a decision to do it, felt comfortable, even as a conservative, to do this. Now, how did we frame some of this? This is a version of an earlier slide. This is how it works in Ohio. What you're looking at here are access to public assistance for coverage in Ohio. So blue is Medicaid. So if you're a child, you have access to Medicaid if your family has up to 200% of poverty. We go to 90 for adults. Then laying in the exchange from 100 to 400, you can immediately see the issue, the coverage gap. So this is our version of the coverage gap, childless adults and some parents. This is an issue of justice. If we do nothing, families up to 400% will be receiving federal assistance to purchase health coverage. While at the lowest income levels, individuals will receive no assistance whatsoever. So as a matter of justice, it is difficult to kind of look away